talking with Kieran O'Reilly, who's over from Brisbane and Ireland, and he's going to tell us a bit about the ploughshares and a bit about his history. How are you going, Kieran?
Good, yeah. I've been back since the beginning of February. I'm still awaiting trial in Ireland, a third trial with four others for disarming a US Navy warplane en route to the war. It's been an interesting time, actually. In Brisbane at the moment, there's an exhibit at the museum at City Hall that's running till September, if anyone gets up there, called Taking It to the Streets, which reflects on the period from 65 to 85, 1985, and the movement that sprung up against the suspension of civil rights for Joe Bjelke-Petersen. So that had a lot to do with my formation. I was arrested when I was at high school, along with 417 other people, for marching against uranium mining, and Joe had suspended all his civil liberties. So, ironically, the Labour Party that's now in power are sending all these previous convictions to the prosecution in Ireland, as they had done to with the FBI when I was in trouble in the States in the early 90s. So it was during that period that Brian Laver, who I guess was one of the main student leaders of the 1960s in Australia, and who was a libertarian socialist or an anarchist, and who was based at Griffith Uni, and he influenced many of us with very radical critique of Marx and also capitalism. So there was a group of us who were faith-based and quite influenced by Brian, and we started a Christian anarchist pacifist group on campus called Two or Three Gathered in his name. So we were basically activists, and we stumbled across a living tradition called the Catholic Worker Movement that began in the 1930s in New York City. There are 130 communities now. People are living together, practicing the acts of mercy, feeding the hungry, sheltering the homeless, visiting the imprisoned, and carrying out non-violent resistance. So its philosophy would be a radical Christian anarchist pacifist movement, although there are many non-Christians and non-anarchists and non-pacifists who are involved in the soup kitchens and the acts of resistance that we do. So the ploughshares movement came out of this, really. A lot of Catholic workers went to jail in World War II for resisting the draft. By Vietnam, Catholic workers were the first people to burn their draft cards publicly. Actually, Dave Miller, who's the husband of Starhawk, was a young Catholic worker in the 1960s. He spent two and a half years in jail for burning his draft card. So the ante got up with the priests Daniel and Philip Berrigan, who decided to break into draft boards and destroy draft files. And that initiated, the first action happened in Catonsville in 1968, and that initiated a lot of actions by what was called the Catholic Left at that stage. Nuns and priests and lay people forming communities and breaking the draft boards. And the FBI came down on them quite heavily. So when people got out of jail in the early mid-70s, the focus began to be first strike nuclear weapons. And the first ploughshares action happened in 1980, where people took the prophecy of Isaiah and Micah to beat swords into ploughshares, literally. Eight people went into a General Electric factory in Pennsylvania and took hammers to nuclear weapons delivery systems. And since then, there's been about 100 actions, roughly, mostly in the States, but also here in Australia, at Jabiluka and B-52 in Darwin, and also in Europe. So, it's a very intense action. The two people received 18 years in prison for them in 84 in the States. Some people received 8 years, some 3 to 5 years. So a Catholic worker experiment in Brisbane. We started a house in 82. It was an open house for Aboriginal street kids, and we financed it by self-managed cooperative work. So that's still going. It's a farm now outside of Brisbane. And Jim Dowling and his wife Anne Ramper and seven kids live on that farm. They actually generate so much alternative electricity, they sell it to a state grid in terms of methane and solar. And Jim and three others are on trial now in Alice Springs, carrying out a citizen's inspection in December, so they've just been up in court this week. And there's five of us awaiting a third trial in Dublin, because in February 2003 we made our way to Shannon Airport, which is on the west coast of Ireland in the county Clare. And this airport was being rapidly militarised and is now the major pit stop for the US war machine to get from North America to Iraq. 1,300 US troops going through Shannon a day now. So in the early months of December 2003, when they were mobilising for the invasion, we broke into a hangar and with hammers disabled a US Navy warplane and have been charged with $2.5 million criminal damage.
Wow, so that, I've also read that that could carry a 10-year sentence.
Yeah, it's a 10-year maximum sentence. Also 200 euros for the window of the hangar. But we're charged with criminal damage without lawful excuse. We believe we have a lawful excuse, and we believe we had a fair trial, which the Irish government have failed to give us on the last two occasions that put us on trial, but they've collapsed because of the behaviour of judges, that we would be acquitted. But yeah, there's a possibility we won't get a fair trial and that we'll go to jail, I guess. So that's a bit of an occupational hazard, and I guess it's relative to when one thinks there are now 1,300 young Americans going through that airport willing to risk their lives, arms and legs to prosecute this war. So a serious anti-war movement will probably have to take similar serious risks, you know, and I think the ability to take those risks and for people to resist is really dependent on how much solidarity there is. I believe if 1% of the people who marched against this war had gone into non-violent resistance in the tradition of Martin Luther King and Gandhi, and 99% of people had been marching against the war proactively supported them in doing that, then the government would have had a major problem, you know. But unfortunately, didn't get beyond protest, and the movement evaporated quite quickly.
So do you think then if there was more civil disobedience and actions such as some of the Ploughshares actions, that there could have actually been a change in the direction of the coalition of the willing, do you think?
Yeah, I think we need a culture of resistance. I mean, there is, you know, like Italy is now pulling out of the war. Spain is pulled out of the war. I think Ireland and Poland are the only proactive European countries in support of the Crusaders. So things are changing. Resistance is there. There are, you know, an Australian-born doctor was sentenced 8 months last week for refusing his third deployment to Iraq, denouncing it as illegal. Sergeant Kevin Benderman is now in prison for a couple of years for refusing to go after doing a tour of Afghanistan. There's actually more resistance coming out of the military now and military families. But, yeah, we're at the beginning of a very long war, and I think the resistance that does exist, whether it's the Pine Gap Four or whether it be ourselves or military resistors, need proactive solidarity.
So the idea that beating the ploughs into swords,
yeah,
that almost sounds violent.
No, I mean, a radical Christian understanding what violence is a violation of the image of God, which is human life, you know. And anything that's made by people is quite secondary to how it services life. And otherwise you get into areas of idolatry when, you know, the junk we make is put above life and nature itself. So you can't really be violent to property, and property is only what is proper to human life. So the US Navy, of course, killed a million children under the age of five throughout the 1990s by imposing these sanctions on Iraq. So, under the Irish Criminal Damage Act, there's actually a defence that says if you damage property to preserve the life or property of another person, that's a legitimate defence, and that's the one we've been running in court so far.
The guys that painted the big red no war sign on the Sydney Opera House, I think, tried that kind of angle in terms of warning others of an imminent danger. So I suppose it's a tradition of that sort of using the law in that sense.
Yeah, well, we'd have different approaches to trial. When we were on trial in New York after disarming B-52 bomber in 91, we defended ourselves. We ran a necessity defence, but we were pretty much closed down by a pretty prejudicial judge. And sometimes for Ploughshares communities, some go into total non-cooperation with the legal system. So at the moment, we've decided to run a defence and be fully represented. And that's how we're going at the moment. We had a very interesting testimony last trial, Jimmy Massey. He'd been a US Marine for 12 years, had been part of the invasion as a sergeant, and the 30 men under him killed over 35 Iraqis who were unarmed at checkpoints while they were in Iraq. So he testified to how the US military were acting beyond the Geneva Conventions, etc. So it was a very powerful testimony.
Just going back to the Dublin incident, it says $2.5 million worth of damage to a plane. That's a lot.
Well, it might seem a lot to you and me, but they've spent a couple of billion, probably tens of billion, on the war itself. So to the Pentagon, it's probably worth less than a cruise missile, I guess. But yeah, so it's quite... we have never seen a breakdown of the bill, you know. I think the American dollar has dropped 20% since we did the action as well, but I would think it's pretty inflated. We only had 6 minutes to work on, so, yeah, it's not worth, you know, since we acted, 2,400 US military returned in body bags. Most of them would have gone through Shannon Airport in Ireland, which is supposed to be a neutral country, to their deaths. 17,000 have been evacuated with amputations, loss of mind, and other serious injury. Over 150,000 Iraqis, mostly women, children, non-combatants, have been killed. So 2.5 million isn't hardly worth a mention, really.
Also, I'm not sure if I know much about the 80-odd suicides reported over the last, a couple of years from soldiers in Iraq.
More Vietnam veterans committed suicide in the States than were killed in the war. That was over 53,000. So once you open this Pandora's box of violence, you know, in terms of self-harm, suicide, domestic violence, other criminal activity, it's ongoing for years and years. I mean, I worked in the States for 4 years. I was in jail for a year there and worked on the streets and shelters and met many veterans of the Vietnam War. So, you know, we'll be reaping this whirlwind for quite a while, I think.
Hey, listen to RTRFM 90.1. We're in the middle of an interview with Kieran O'Reilly, peace activist, and the interview continues for another 10 minutes. You're in Australia now, obviously. I'm talking to you in Perth. When you arrived in early February this year, you were taken aside by ASIO in the Brisbane airport and interviewed. Can you tell me a bit about that? You're going to get put into jail for talking about it.
It was like a 25-hour flight or 30-hour flight from Ireland, and I was literally just coming off the ramp, and the two guys were waiting for me. The first question they asked me was, have you had dealings with ASIO agents before? And I said, well, look, mate, you tell me. You're the secret intelligence organisation. I'd be really curious who the ASIO agents have been before. I said, I'm obligated to talk to you, and they were very ambiguous about that. And I knew there'd been new legislation rushed through, and I didn't quite know where I stood. So I ended up in a secure room, like we were locked in that room for about half an hour. You know, as I said, they didn't ask me if I was here to organise a big march in Melbourne or Sydney. They asked me what I was doing at Shoalwater, Operation Talisman Sabre, last year. We were 11,000 US troops who were exercising, and we put off a blockade, pulled off a blockade there. And there wasn't no relationship to the Pine Gap people. My brother was arrested at the action, and whether I was going to Alice Springs. So what they're concerned about is if we go anywhere near where they're, you know, recruiting young people for the war or training for the war, or in the case of Pine Gap, you know, directing cruise missile attacks in Iraq. So that's where we got to be going, I think, you know.
So with Pine Gap, your brother, Sean, was involved with that action, which we did report with on ED Media late last year in December. And he managed to get off, I think, or with a fine. I can't remember. The outcome was only a few weeks ago, I think.
Yeah, Sean was, I think he did a follow-up support vigil once the inspectors were arrested, and he went out the next day. And obviously the federal police were pretty pissed off. So they kind of arrested him on a pretty dodgy charge of interfering with an officer. So he went up to Alice, where he's lived and worked before as a nurse, actually, and defended himself and cross-examined so efficiently that the police contradicted themselves, and he didn't even have to take the stand. He just called for no case to answer. So he didn't get any costs, though, you know. Like, it was a frivolous case, and he had to, like, take time off work and pay for an air trip. So he put in for costs, but they wouldn't award him costs. So the other four are up there now, and...
Yeah, I heard this morning there was led in action on Sunday.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. It sounds like there's some local activists up there, and you know, good mutuality between the people and the locals. And it's a very significant place, of course. It's very hard to get to.
So back to the ASIO. What happens towards the end of that? They just let you go?
Yeah, I said, you know, we're pacifists, and we always stay and pray rather than hit and split. So I just said, what's your problem, you know? And he said, we're concerned about groups who are into violence. And I said, well, you know, we're going to pass this movement for 70 years. And he said, do you know any groups into violence? And I should have said, you know, yes, that's Ronald Reagan. I was a bit jet-lagged, so...
IDF.
I said, you can try the bikies at Bathurst every Easter. But, of course, yes, it's Ronald Reagan. They've just been in Brisbane, so...
Oh, okay, yeah.
They really haven't looked at the roots of terror, you know. Like Peter Ustinov, before he died, said... Terrorism is the war of the poor. War is the terrorism of the rich. And there's no, since this whole September 11th thing, there's been no real sincere attempt to look at the roots of the phenomenon. Mm. And I was in London a day after it was hit by the suicide bombers. And I think we're just going to see more of it, unfortunately, you know, as the war escalates and expands. And because our civil liberties are evaporating and people aren't noticing because they don't use them, you know.
Yeah.
But now there's a lot of security hype around at the moment. Like, I think the Asia interview was just a kind of a frightener for me when I was arriving. Just them telling me that I'm under surveillance for the next 3 months, you know.
Okay. So they're probably watching us now from an inconspicuous
window. Well, there's so many of them now. They're not very, well, there's the CCTV there, isn't it?
Yes.
There's so many of them now. It's like a growth industry. And because they haven't got any problems to solve, they create problems. Mm-hmm. You know, they... I was told last year there's a photo of me in every military police station in Australia.
Oh, have you left?
And I've only been in Australia 2 months out of the last 4 years, so
wow.
It's got nothing to do with reality.
Mm.
I mean, it kind of might be a bit flattering on one level, but it's just taking someone and spinning them and inflating them and to justify their careers and their budgets, you know?
As an anarchist, you call yourself an anarchist, yeah?
Yeah, I guess my definitions are I'm a radical Christian. Radical is Latin for returning to the roots.
Yes.
I think for the first 300 years, Christianity had an anarchist orientation towards power and a pacifist orientation towards violence, and that's why it was illegal. And then you had the whole Constantine shift, where it went from being illegal to be a Christian to being illegal not to be one in Rome, and you had the just war theory and the development of private property. So I think anarchy and pacifism are interesting definitions because they're both negative definitions. Pacifism means without violence. Anarchy, I think, means without exploitation. So an anarchist is a person who lives with the question, how do I live a life without exploiting anybody? And a pacifist should be, how do I live a life without, you know, using violence? So they're much better questions than answers to me.
Yes.
And more about orientation rather than tight, you know, cute responses for everything, you know.
Yeah,
I think if any movement's going to be pluralistic, it should be the anarchist movement. And I think people's faith, you know, whether they're agnostic or pagan or Catholic or Buddhist, it really doesn't need a leftist inquisition, you know. I mean, how people come to terms with the existential question of what the fuck am I doing here and I'm not going to be here for fucking long is really up to them, you know. And but as long as they can come to some agreement on ethics of democracy and, you know, empowerment and stuff, I think it should be a real growth time for an anarchist movement, you know.
Yeah, I know that Joe Toscano in Melbourne says, welcome to the 21st century, the anarchist century.
Yeah, the only show in town. I saw Chomsky Dublin in January, and his attitude to anarchism is quite similar. It's just, he just sees it as common sense.
Yeah.
It's not some kind of theosophical insight that only certain elitist subculture has.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
I mean, people practice a lot of the principles of it on a daily basis in terms of mutual aid.
Yes, yes.
So, you know,
affinity,
as some of the gays say, reflect, you know, it's time to come out of the ghetto and just move on the struggle, you know, just kind of live it out now. And, but, you know, war is always a big issue for anarchists because war is the basis of the state, as is the prison system. So that's why it's important to keep a consistent activism around it, I think.
When they have a war, they expect protest, and the liberal position is it's okay to have your protest as long as we can have our war. Now, could you maybe elaborate on that? And are you trying to say that the government doesn't listen when people protest?
Yeah, I think the government factors in that there's going to be a protest response, and, you know, it's all even quite therapeutic. And as long as it stays within certain parameters, they'll say, you know, we respect your position and your right to have one in a democracy, and that's why we have a military to defend that right. And it becomes this kind of codependent dance, and then oppositional parties, whether they're the Labor Party or the small Marxist cults or whatever, kind of view the war as a marketing opportunity, you know, for their political party or their brand name. And that kind of sickens me, really. And so, you know, it's when people moved into non-violent resistance, and we did quite dramatically in Ireland. I mean, the response to our action was, this plane was turned around from the war and got sent back to Texas. The Irish government deployed the Irish Army and Navy to secure the airport from us. Four US private companies transporting troops to the war through Ireland pulled out of Ireland. So it's quite a dramatic and immediate response. And we were totally marginalised by the, you know, the Trotskyist-controlled and Irish anti-war movement, you know, because they didn't want any kind of political competition and stuff. So it's just pathetic, you know, you got four people in jail for doing this quite non-violent, dramatic action, and the lefty bureaucrats are pretending it don't exist, you know. So, yeah, it's just really childish bullshit, and we're in a very dangerous period, and we're at the beginning of a very long war, and so it's very important that we build an anti-war movement from the bottom again, because the last one's evaporated, really.
Yeah, that's a far cry from you know, the millions that hit the streets back in February. I mean, this year we had a few people went out across the globe, but I think, I'm not sure of the numbers, but it was certainly pale in considering what happened in 2003 when we were in the streets.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that the war has never been popular, but the scary thing is it shows you they can have a war without any popular support now, and all they need is our silence and our sedation.
Yeah,
and we're serving that up, you know.
Cool. And is there anything finally you want to leave us with for Perth?
Well, just if you want to follow our progress or our demise, it's www.peaceontrial.com. That's the Irish trial. Our four friends in jail at the moment in the States, www.stpatricks4.org. And you can write letters to them in prison. Perth sounds really exotic when you're locked up in the States. And some other people in jail you can find on the website of the School of the Americas Watch, which is www.soaw.org. And, you know, I've spent 2 years in jail, and you can't underestimate the significance of getting a letter in jail in terms of morale, but also it makes you a lot safer in terms of staff, back off, and makes you quite popular with the stamp collectors, all sorts of things. So write to people in jail for resisting the war.
Thank Excellent. You. Thank you very much, Kieran.
Thanks a lot. Good luck.
Money and influential positions and have the air of influential people that they can do what they like, and I think it's
culture. Get up, stand up, and do whatever it takes to make a difference.
Perth Indie Media Radical Radio Show. Every Wednesday, 7 till 8 p.m. RTR FM 92.1.
This is the Perth Indie Media Radical Radio Show, and that was Al speaking to Kieran O'Reilly.
Yeah, I spoke to Kieran this afternoon outside the Art Gallery. A bit of wind there picking up on the microphone. I'm testing out my new microphone. But yeah, he's in town this week. I think he's still in town next week as well. But you can catch him talking at UWA at a... I'm not exactly sure. I don't have the details on me. But it's lunchtime tomorrow. If you go to Perth Indie Media, perth.indiemedia.org, and look in the top right-hand corner of the website, there's a calendar, and you'll see two events posted there, one of them being the UWA event, and the other event, which is put on by the...
Christian Anarchists.
Yeah, the Christian Centre for Social Action. You catch him when he's in Perth and join us for dinner, they say, Friday 28th of April, 7 p.m, at the Christian Centre for Social Action on the corner of Canterbury and 879 Albany Highway, Vic Park. It's $20 if waged and $10 if you're not, BYO. And as he says, when they have a war, they expect protest, and the Liberal position is it's okay for you to have your protest as long as we can have our war. And yeah, so we thank Kieran for spending some time with us this afternoon for that interview.